Hello there. This is Jim, the Keys Bartender, coming to you from a beautiful pool, Key Largo. The Keys Bartender podcast is a podcast about bartending and life. And this is episode 800. I was only saying 800. It seems as if sometimes that my brain works like my computer. When my computer, my laptop, which I bought last year, was new, it was quick, it was on the ball, it was responsive. I didn't have a lot of stuff on it. And now that there's pausing and lapses and jumps when I'm recording, you'll hear a jump going on. I can't quite figure it out. Much like my brain. But then again, I can't say when my brain was new, when I was very young, that it worked really great then too. I don't know when there was a time when it was flawless, much like the brand new computer. So I guess I just have to work with what I have. And you may say, hey, Jim, you need to prepare more because you seem a little disjointed. Actually, believe it or not, this is me prepared. Yeah, I know, crazy, crazy. This is me prepared. So today I was thinking about work, about how my body runs. And as a bartender or doing whatever job, when I'm doing jobs for myself, like notary work or my spin instructor, which is only 45 minutes to an hour, I can manage my time a lot better. But when I'm working on for someone else's dime, ultimately you're always working for your own dime, but I'm on someone else's time, they set the rules. And at the new place I work, which, as you heard, the Ayamurada Brewery and Distillery in Ayamurada, wonderful place. I love the people I work, but they had this thing where, yeah, you can eat whenever you want. You just have to tell somebody and make sure you have coverage. Well, I understand the thing that the one thing I have to talk to them about it is that I don't really necessarily eat like that. I don't sit down for 10 minutes or 12 minutes and eat. I'm more of a grazer. And that's the way my body works. Best. I think at this age, the way I consume calories, I don't like carrying 800, 900 calories on me at one time. Think about it. When you get up in the morning, the way we eat, and everyone can eat whatever they want, the way they want. And they know, I mean, if you're really aware of how you feel after doing something, you know how it works. I know if I eat a very big meal, loaded with carbs, I get this real sluggishness that occurs afterwards. So when I'm working, I don't ever eat any sizable meals when I'm working. I like to break it up into little groups. I love going out to dinner and having a dinner. I used to eat huge dinners. Now, not so much. Not as huge comparatively to what I ate before. I guess that's the way I really should describe it. I eat normally. I mean, I do like my sweets. I do like my meat. I like my potatoes. I like a salad every so often, things like that. But during the day, I like to eat smaller meals, but more of them. So I may have a yogurt and a banana and maybe cereal. Sometimes I'll make up some eggs and some an English muffin, whatever. I just priming the pump to get a little calories in me, so I'm not walking around. I'm not trying to, let's say my body needs 2,900 calories during the day. Well, I'm not going to do 800, 800, and 1,300 calories for dinner. I'd rather do, well, I like that 1,300 calories, 1,400 calories for dinner, because after dinner, normally on the day I'm off, I'm not really doing anything. So I can get all those calories one time. But if I do that, a bigger, well, I don't think I'm running as optimally. That's just my body doesn't work. I like to have maybe And this could be psychological. I understand that. But psychological or in practicality or realistically, I feel better with the smaller eating periods, smaller groups of calories. So I need about a minute and a half, 2 minutes to get 300-400 calories. And that's grazing. I understand that. And I don't like sitting down because then I kind of slow down. It's not like my heart's going at a million. I don't need to sit down. If I'm working under 10 hours, I don't need to. I don't like sitting down. And I'm not trying to, I realize what I'm saying. I'm not trying to kid myself. I'm not trying to be better than anybody else. I just realize I operate better that way at a pace where my heart rate's pretty constant, a little higher up than I'm ready to do activity, and I'm moving along, and I'm not exhausted. Sometimes I like to move a lot, get a vigorous sprint in here and there. And that's the way I like to work. So I have to try to fit in the culture that they have there and say, hey, listen, instead of taking 10 minutes, I really only need 4 minutes, 2 minutes here, and then 2 minutes there, spaced 3 hours apart, and I'm golden. You know, that's something to do. You don't have, for 2 minutes, almost no one misses you for 2 minutes. People take bathroom breaks for 2 minutes. That's what I need to eat. And people say, no, we want you to do this. I understand. But I think a lot of times people gauge procedure on the way they do things. And you can gauge a lot of things. I mean, obviously, you have to have standardized requirements for people at work. But when it comes to the operation of your own body, I think you're your own best expert at knowing how that runs. So it's incumbent upon you to tell the people around you and say, listen, if I don't get this towards the end, and this happened last night. Now you may, if you're an avid listener, you heard me say this before. They make jokes about this, in popular culture, not about me. I'm saying about people in general. When they get hungry, they get angry. I get pissy, asshole-y, shitty, cantankerous, old man. When I'm hungry and when I have, and I think I get kind of sluggish when I eat a lot. So I have this happy medium that I like to be in. I like to be in. And that's another thing you have to do, because obviously if that's the way they want it, that's the way you're going to, but I'm still only going to sit 2 minutes because I'm not going to sit for 10 minutes. I don't want to slow down. I'm not going to eat a bigger meal because they require it, because I know that's not going to work for me. I know I'm not going to, I kind of slow down. I'm really not performing. Yesterday was kind of busy. It was a beautiful day after a crappy day, and it was kind of windy. So a lot of the, here in the Keys, where we have a lot of people that like to go fishing and do water sports, things outside, when the weather was good enough to be outside, but not necessarily optimal for water activities. So what could be better than to come to the garden at the Amrata Brewery and Distillery? And a lot of people decided on doing it, which was fortunate for me because that's how I make my money. And I'm not, like I said, I'm not complaining about that, but I am trying to say, hey, listen, I understand. And I don't begrudge people. I do not begrudge people their time. If they need 10, 15 minutes break, I understand that. And some people, that's what they do. And that works for them. But I don't think a one size fits all for people. I like to be moving the whole time. Some people need a little break. And I like to incorporate motion into my eating. I remember years ago when I was working at a restaurant, There was, and I did tell this story a couple hundred episodes ago, but it was about a man who came in. He was about my age, the way I am now. He's 60, but he was fit. He was of smaller stature, slender, and he sat down at the bar. He had maybe one or two drinks at that, and he ate for his size. He couldn't have been more than 140 pounds. He ate a big pasta, and I think it was chicken parmesan. He had a couple, we had a sushi bar there too. So he had a one or two sushi rolls, and then he had a dessert. And he may have had an appetizer. And I was looking to him, and I excused myself, and I said to him, "Excuse me, sir, I noticed that you look pretty fit. And I'm fit myself, but what is this regimen you're on where you eat this?" And he goes, "I'm on a caveman diet. I only eat one time a day." And he told me, he says, "You know, as human beings, for thousands of years, the idea was that humans would go hunt and they get their meal and eat one time a day, or sometimes go 2 days without eating." And it was kind of, I guess that's intermittent fasting. You'd call it intermittent fasting, but at the time they called it a caveman diet, where you eat one big meal a day towards the end of the day. Not right before you go to sleep, but eat all those calories. And he said it worked for him. And I thought, oh, but you got to be really careful with these when you're doing anything too big, like eating too much at one time. I always thought that your digestive system, here I am with limited knowledge trying to say it, but your digestive system probably is best designed to consume gradually instead of trying to get all your calories at one time. And it just, you know, one of those things where it just seems right. It just seems right. So why not try it for a while? This is what I would suggest, is try it for a while, see if it works for you. Otherwise, stick with your three big meals a day. People do that for, you know, at least in the United States, at least 100 years, maybe 200 years. I don't think maybe in colonial times that the working people necessarily ate three square meals a day. They may have done a light breakfast and a big dinner. Sounds right. Sounds right by me. And I think as you go further back in time, the amount of calories you were consuming, especially depending on what economic status you had, you would probably be consuming less calories or less varied calories as you go down that economic ladder and eating just one central meal. So as a bartender, and I think it's incumbent upon me to moderate my personality the best I can. And that would be not getting pissy. I see it happen. I'm feeling it. I'm telling people. I say, "You know what? I'm sorry. I'm hungry." It's as if you were experiencing pain. Let's say you had a severe headache and you weren't at your best, but you're able to do your job and you have to say, "Please forgive me. I have a headache right now, so I'm not exactly at my best." And people say, "Well, if you're not at your best, you should leave your job." But if you could do the job, you do your job. Sometimes there's not someone, there's nobody around to do your job. And if you can physically do it without any detrimental effect to your well-being, other than pain and suffering, it doesn't make it worse. I would say just go work through it. But, it does make sense to tell people those things. You know, and not too much, you know, if something bad happened in your life, something serious, and say, "Oh, I'm sorry, I'm going through a personal thing. I'm going to be able to get through that, but I'm here working. I'm able to do the job." You know, That's it. And some really, you know, some employers, they say, listen, we don't care what happens in your personal life. We want you to be this way where you work. Well, that's great. Depending on what, you know, obviously, if you're a Broadway actor and you're in the main role, you're not one of the bit players in the back, then it's incumbent upon you to do your best and be unaffected. But it's sometimes it's virtually impossible. I would challenge anybody, even to the CEO of the company, when something serious happens, that they're able to perform at the same level. So if you're a high performer, that could be no problem. What, really? Why would it be a problem? Because, you know, at this point, when some things are going on, I'll be an average performer. I'll be like my coworkers. So that's the way I view about taking in calories, about eating and taking breaks and stuff like that. I know this is a small thing. I'll be back. Oh, wait, what's this? I'm going to stop there. Hi there. I am back. And as you could tell by the end of the last segment, I still haven't gotten the hang of handling sound editing. So, but you know, if I got really good at it, then there might be a time where I actually would have commercials and things like that. And then that would be, I'd get all commercial and you'd call me a sellout. I am ready to sell out if I can turn this into money. But I'm, you know, actually, this is the 800 episode. So if I haven't made any money yet, you know, what's the big deal, right? Why start now? So, and I'm not complaining about it. It's good enough just to have this platform and be able to talk to, you know, my couple hundred listeners. And I'm fine with that. I wanted to talk about two things. First of all, I'll post it in the, I will put a title, a picture on the title of the show. I'm going to replace, it'll be the banana car. There's a banana car down here. And you know, I lived in the Keys so long that I see a guy that's driving a banana down the road, a banana a car on, with a the chassis is a banana, that it doesn't really surprise me, right? I've seen a motorboat, I've seen other things. And you know, if you're in a bigger city, you probably see that stuff too. It's not that unusual. But in Keys, it's actually, now it's like, ah, yeah, why not? Why not that? And it was that was last week. This week, or right now, I went out on a notary job assignment for one of my regular customers. I was signing some papers with him, and I was driving back, and he's riding a bike. This gentleman's riding a bike, and he has an umbrella. Now it's not raining, and he wasn't using the umbrella as for blocking the sun. It looked like he was holding it in front of him as if he was it looked like he was using it as a shield. But what I might surmise by that is that he was using it as a propulsion system, as if he were a land sailboat. So he was just holding it. He was riding his bike. He was an older man. He had to, you know, the ZZ Top beard or the Mountain Man beard going down there. And he was riding along with the umbrella in front of him. I thought the wind was coming in his face. So I think it might be, you know, it would be better for the return trip. But I guess because I was driving, I'm going 40 miles an hour. So I wouldn't necessarily know that. It didn't feel, it looks like it's actually, it was coming across. So I don't know how much it was helping him. I don't think it's coming from that direction, but I thought that was a little interesting. once again, not weird for down here. It was such a beautiful day down here, and I was making this, I was on Spotify, and I was making a mood playlist, meaning a mood, and I want all my moods to be happy. So I what do I call this one? I forget what's the name. I think it says good vibes or something like that, and good feeling something. And I'm listening to this music, and I said, boy, I got to get out and do something. I recorded the first half of the episode, and then I just went for a ride down the Alamorada, stopped by my wife's work, said hello to her, and then went another couple hundred yards south and stopped at my place of work, had lunch, said hello to my coworkers, and then came back. I think, first, I started out visiting my old job, saying hello to Kathy, the owner of the Catch restaurant in Key Largo. A great place to stop still. And since, you know, if I had thousands and thousands of listeners and they were coming to see me, and I did have people come and see me at the Catch restaurant, I don't think it's going to affect them as much. And anecdotally, I like using that word, anecdotally, Oakley Doakley, that's Ned Flanders from The Simpsons. Anecdotally, it appears as one of the bartenders at my new place of work said they noticed it was very slow. It was very busy at work last night. A lot of tourists. And they said, this fellow said his brother is a manager of one of the hotels in Amarana. It says they're empty and a lot of the other hotels are empty at this moment. And as of Wednesday, February 7th. But I don't know why that would be, because it's getting close to, one, Valentine's Day. Two, it's Super Bowl weekend. People have, it's really becoming, Super Bowl Sunday is really becoming an event where people don't travel unless they're going to the Super Bowl. So many people that, there are football fans, and then there's people that are just fans of parties. I'm working on Super Bowl Sunday. I don't think, it just seems as if a lot of the places I went to when I was free on Sundays, on Super Bowl Sunday, one of the places that worked never opened up on Super Bowl Sunday. And it's not just because they are football fans. It's that home parties is such, I said it once and I'll say it again. It's one of the easiest parties to throw because the entertainment is made for you. It's the Super Bowl. All you have to do is a block pool. It's snacks and booze, and you can have people bring stuff. So you have a party. You have a party, you know. You don't have to worry about music. You don't have to do that. I did do one, been to one or two where they had dancing afterwards, where they had a DJ at a house party. It was great. I met women I dated at Super Bowl parties. So now it's becoming on one of those universal occurrences in the United States. I wouldn't be surprised if they, you know, there's a Super Bowl parties in the UK and Germany where it has kind of like a cult following. The NFL has a cult following there, and some maybe in Mexico and Canada. And there's probably a couple other places that it's somewhat big at, you know, big in specific regions. So there's that particular thing. I wanted to talk about, in general life, about getting into conversations. Once again, if you had, I've said this before, if you had a missionary for a church, or let's say Jehovah Witnesses or Mormons, or anybody come to knock on your door, you know when they're knocking on the door, the person that's there for the church, the Mormons or Jehovah Witnesses or whatever church, that they're pretty committed followers. They're pretty committed followers, and their job is to introduce you to their religion and invite you to join. And if they're knocking on your door doing that, Would you ask them to come to your church? I mean, it'd be kind of funny. You say, well, listen, I'll come and listen to you. Will you listen to me? I'd like to invite you to my church. And so what is your church? Well, it's mine. I just made this one up. No. Or it's a Catholic church, Baptist church, Methodist church, Reformed Jewish, Islam, Hindu, Buddhist, Shinto, Zoroastrianism. I think this is the way you say it. Zoroastrian, Wiccan, whatever. You know, whatever thing, and invite them in and say, listen, would you talk to me? Would you give me a good hearing if I give you a good hearing? And I would surmise they would say, no, we're here to tell you about ours. We're not really interested in hearing about yours. Well, that's pretty much the way it is when you talk to somebody, when they try to get involved with you in a conversation, whether it's about politics, religion, a way of life, nutrition. You know, if someone's committed to one side and you can ask them, would you, if they're trying to engage you in a debate and they want you to hear them out, I think it would be completely plausible and acceptable and suitable for you to ask them, would you give a open hearing to what I had to say in opposition to what you're saying? Would you consider it? And if they're, you know, and if they're honest people, they say, no, I'm so completely committed to my cause that I don't want to hear it. And you just say, okay, well, I'm not interested in hearing your side. And that's the part when people say they're insulting, when you say, well, I have my right to speak. And I said, well, why would you want to do that if I have a point of view you're not willing to listen to? Why would I listen to your side if you're not going to consider it? If I give you an open hearing and they go, oh yeah, I'll give you an open hearing. And all of a sudden, you can tell when you're telling that and they start interrupting you. It's not going to happen. So I would say right then to do it as nicely as possible, shut it down. Just shut it down. If someone, you know, in anything, if someone's a misogynist and they start telling jokes and it's, you know, kind of off-color jokes and say, you know, I'm really not interested in that. That's not my, oh, well, this, that, oh, you must be closing me down. Well, and I said, no, you have a point of view, obviously, that I don't agree with. So if you're telling a joke that some might consider racist, right? It's pretty much the same thing. You say, well, you think it's okay to say those things or say it about, you know, jokes about gay people or trans. And say, well, can I have a discussion about this? And if they say no, then you can say, well, I guess we can agree that we're not going to be talking about this. And a lot of times they could be offended, but I'm most reasonable people, and I say that lightly because if you're really locked in your views and you're not going to hear someone out, you just pretty much threw out reason. Because a reasonable person would say, yeah, I'll give you a hearing. Let's hear it. I mean, scientists, if you go up to a scientist and say, listen, could you tell, if I speak to you about religion and then you tell me about physics or origins of the universe, and I'll listen to yours, and you have to be open about it. And I really think that a lot of people have, and it could be the opposite view too. If you have a scientist that says, I just want to talk about science, and the other person says, well, I'm going to tell you about my faith, I'll give you a clear hearing about your science. And hopefully they're honest about that because, you know, yeah, I would say, listen, if you're religious and you're lying to me right now and you actually believe what you're saying, that would be the big caveat. If you're actually believing what you're saying, then if you're lying to me, you're committing a sin. And if you're a scientist and you say, yeah, I'll give you a hearing and stuff like that, and you shut them down and stuff like that, you're not being investigative. You're not listening to it. So, I mean, it does. There are two sides of that street. And, you know, someone obviously could be less than truthful about their hearing. But at least if they give a tacit approval to the arrangement, you could do that. And I think that's the best way to get into a discussion with people. But generally, people, they want to say something, and they just want their side to be heard, and they're not willing to hear the other side. So I don't even understand. If you're not willing to listen to the other side, why would you even espouse your views? It happens a lot. It happens a lot at the bar, and you just sit there and you go, and I've been guilty of it as much as anyone else. Anyone else. I say, well, listen, you know, country music. I'm not a big fan of country music in the broad terms of country music. You know, I love this bar kind of stuff. And the Huckleberry music, I'm not really a big fan of. But I do like bluegrass. I do like country. Sometimes I dig my heels in order to be, to make my displeasure palpable, you know, more coherent. Say, I don't like any of it. No, that's not true. I like a lot of it. There's music. There's a couple country songs I really like, more than a couple country songs. But if you put on a pop country station nowadays, I really, really not a big fan of the genre. But I'd have to listen to it. I'd have to tell someone to listen to it nowadays and say, listen, I'll give them a good hearing. Something like that. I do like some of them. The guy, whatever his name is, the guy's Kenny Chesney. I kind of like him. You know, Taylor Swift, she was country in the beginning. Carrie Underwood. So, some of the other ones. I do like them. And I like the old school ones. But I'm trying to be more open. I'm trying to adhere to my beliefs. And someone says, well, listen, kind of, if you want to tell me about the guy yet you worship, your dear leader, would you allow me to speak in opposition? Would you consider what I have to say? You know, if they don't, and they say, well, then we really don't have any room to talk about this subject. I think that works in personal life and in the bar and everything, in his family. Because I have a family member, my sister, and we have differing political views. And we just made a decision. I made a decision. She told me point blank that she's not going to consider anything I have to say in opposition to what she says. And I said, well, then we're not really going to have any conversations then. Because in order to have a conversation, it has to be two-way. Otherwise, it's called indoctrination. Indoctrination is where only one side comes out. And since I have the podcast, I get to say that. But it is the truth. If you don't allow the opposition to be heard, then, yeah, there you go. So, yeah, I'll give you willing to hear you. Are you willing to listen to me? And that's usually my litmus test for a conversation on things that are touchy. Well, this is Jim the Keys Bartender. I'll be back again. Sorry about that, you know, weird stuff in the first episode, but I'll be back again and get a load of the banana car. Bye.